This is The Topic is Trek, episode 14, for Friday, February 9th, 2018. Amazon Prime Directive. Welcome to The Topic is Trek, the podcast that runs on impulse power. Join us for a journey where no show has gone before. If it has to do with Star Trek, there's a good chance we'll talk about it. Sooner or later, because on this show, the topic is Trek. Engage already! Well, hello, everyone. I'm one of your co-hosts, Clinton Allvord, and beaming in to join me, as always, are Mr. Craig Stepp.
Hola. Kapla.
Kapla. I didn't know you spoke French. And Mr. Chuck Tomasi.
I don't know about this beaming stuff. You sure it's safe?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. You just go before McCoy for some reason. He says he doesn't want to do it. I don't understand it.
What we got back wasn't human.
Well, of course it was a Vulcan. Of course it wasn't. If we got a human back, I'd worry.
It resembles a Vulcan turtle.
The appropriate response is, oh, yes, it's safe. Snotty beamed me twice last night.
Right. Oh, I can see you gentlemen are in fine form for tonight's episode.
Yes. Yes, we are. I'm hitting the Romulan nail too early.
Yes, that's good stuff. Well, let's get going then with subspace chatter. We're going to tap into the subspace chatter. Just like that. We're going to press those buttons.
The ensign's asleep at the helm again.
Oh, that's my name.
And see what is happening in and around the Trek universe.
I got one.
Let's start off with Chuck. Well, I can't make my segue into the first story. Darn it.
Well-oiled machine tonight. From Inverse.com, when asked how he feels about being part of the huge legacy of Star Trek, Jason Isaacs rapidly quips, "Not anymore."
Wah, wah, wah.
The 13th episode of Star Trek Discovery that aired on Sunday, this is a little while ago, seals the fate of his character Gabriel Lorca. The actor tells Inverse that he's relieved that his Star Trek journey is over, despite good memories of the cast and crew. Now Isaacs says he can finally tell the truth as to why he took the role of Captain Lorca. Spoilers ahead.
Where is it?
Spoiler alert.
I don't know if it's a spoiler alert if it's 2 or 3 weeks old. You be my guest. You may be waiting to binge watch the entire season. Be my guest.
Yeah.
Okay, this is spoiler alerts from episode 13, What's Past is Prologue. Quote, "I wouldn't have said yes to just being a captain in the abstract," Isaac says confidently. "I also knew it wasn't going to be like any Star Trek captain that had come before. I knew the whole story. It gave me something juicy and fun and very secretive to play with. I feel an enormous relief now that I don't have to lie anymore. Not just to journalists and the public, which is horrible, but also to my friends, my family, everybody. Only my closest circle knew I was going to die and it was going to be over and that I was from the mirror world. Dun, 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 dun." It felt like the shackles are off now.
Wait. He kept it from his friends, his family, and everybody, but his closest circle knew. Who exactly is in his closest circle?
The director. Oh. The writers?
The person with his paycheck.
The secret Captain Lorca has been harboring since first appearance in the third season of Discovery was finally revealed in the 12th. I'm getting number nausea here.
Mm-hmm.
He's not. I noticed on After Trek, they just refer to, oh, that was in 5.
Actually, it's funny. After Trek, it seems like their numbers are one behind.
Well, the episode numbers are, because remember episodes one and two, and then they did episode one of After Trek.
That's true.
So they're always going to be one behind, because there's technically one more. Anyway, he's not Lorca from the Prime Universe, but instead a villainous version of Lorca from the infamous Mirror Universe with his goatee shaved off.
I knew that.
Since being stranded in the positive, upbeat Star Trek realm, I hate the songs they sing over here.
Upbeat with a whole Klingon war going on. Whatever.
Right, yeah. This place is so sappy, it's making me sick. Where was I? Lorca has been plotting to get back to his own dimension and retake the Terran Empire from Emperor Giorgio, played by Michelle Yeoh. Though none of this was broadcast to the audience ahead of time, for obvious reasons, Isaacs thinks this will make the second viewing even better. When people rewatch it, they will see it was crystal clear that I was clearly not Prime Lorca, or Prime material. And that, hence the show title, Amazon Prime. Yeah.
Ah.
Yeah, we got to talk to our writers. And that I had a different set of intentions and motivations, Isaac says, but the joy of it was in playing it close enough to my chest that it's only apparent on the second time through and not the first time through. So there's a lot more you can read into this article. It's a whole lot of fun. It also notes, of course, we know Jason Isaacs very well as Lucius Malfoy in the Harry Potter films. He also provided the voice of the evil Inquisitor in Star Wars Rebels and creeping everyone out as Dr. Hap Percy in the OA. I have to go back and watch that now because I don't remember that character offhand. I loved the show, but I just don't remember the movie. But I don't remember that character. I'm going to have to go back and watch.
Well, did you see also in the article, one thing to note is that Jason Isaacs lended his voice to Star Trek Continues.
Yes. Yes, he did. There's a funny quote as he's standing here with the sword by Emperor Giorgio's, I don't know what that is, Stanley Cup throne or Olympics. He quotes
World Series trophy.
It's very disturbing to see a Kremlin statement that has my name on it. It's like, holy bleep, does Vladimir Putin know my name?
Right.
Yes, it says Isaacs was the voice of Esper, though he was chiefly credited as Jason Lorca.
Well, if I'd have read the credits, I might have seen that.
That's right. Hey, something's up here.
Something smells fishy.
I do want to go back and watch the series again. I don't know about you guys, but I think it's worth a second viewing when we can mainline this thing and pick up all those little clues. They've hinted on them in After Trek when they had Jason on the show and talked about, you know, why he didn't answer this question or his particular response to that thing, or, hey, look, he's eating Kelpian. Where'd he get that anyway?
Actually,
does that mean that fortune cookies are a thing in the Terran Empire? Because he had this thing with the fortune cookies going, that's an odd thing for the Terran Empire to be into.
No. It's one of those things he latched onto when he came to this one. He goes, I dig these. They don't have these in my universe.
And Furbies.
Yes.
And karaoke.
Yeah. Tardigrades. No, well, I was going to say real quick is that Kim wanted to watch, my wife, she wanted to watch some of Star Trek because we're going to go on the cruise next year.
You are? What a coincidence. So am I.
It's not out of the question for our family either.
Yay! Oh, hurry up. Come on, man. You got to do it.
Fingers crossed.
All right. Join us.
I watched the first two episodes again with her, and I'm like, my whole time, you know, she's watching it, and I'm watching, I'm going, wow, we've come so far.
Yes.
Because you know, I obviously been watching them up to current, and I'm like, whoa, we've come so far from all of this, and we haven't even, again, we hadn't even gotten on the Discovery because she hadn't watched episode 3 yet. And I'm like, oh, man. Kind of funny.
I built the model out of wood.
What? What? No. What? No.
I was
that.
Clicking on Craig's next link, his story, bringing that up, expecting to read something, and a YouTube video started playing.
Here's your segue.
You're rooting my segue because as much as Lorca was not a model captain, let's talk about Star Trek models.
Oh boy,
that wasn't worth it. Just keep going.
So anyway, you, Craig. I've been rewatching Deep Space Nine. There's a lot of holes in my Deep Space Nine viewing, so I thought, what the heck? I'm gonna go and watch them all. So I'm now down to season 7. And I'm about almost halfway through it. Anyway, so I was I've been looking up a few things on, you know, Google and YouTube about Deep Space Nine, and all of a sudden it's an old show where they're talking about making the models and stuff for Deep Space Nine. There's more to it than just this portion of it, but so I started watching the video, and it was so cool to see them building the station itself, where it's just metal bars, and then they start, you know, they're talking about all the details and all the things they did to really make it have some depth to it, and then filming the model and how difficult it was, because honestly, it is a weird shape.
Prepare yourself, listener, if you do watch this, because you will be inundated with mullets and baggy shirts of the 90s.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, but it was fun to watch for seeing them bring the models to life.
So, and blowing up the Saratoga 3 times.
Yes, that was the other thing I was going to bring up, as they were, you know, doing the hang it upside down and film it upside down or whatever, try and make it look right. Yeah, they blew it up 3 times. They made the shuttlecraft, and they were talking about the technique they were using in the day, shooting the models with robotic cameras, and they would make several passes. And
some of those computerized systems look pretty ancient today. I think they had an IBM PC portable with 2.5-inch or 2.5-height floppy drives in it. And then they had another controller that was like the size of an iPad, only it had all mechanical buttons on it.
Like, yeah.
I think my favorite part, though, is they have a blue screen.
Yes.
I think we're just using blue screen effects there. And it's the scene in the pilot where Benjamin Sisko and Jake are walking past this window, and outside the window you can see Deep Space Nine, so they've got to map that shot afterwards, and clearly there are these giant wires all over the floor, and you can see the actors looking and stepping over them.
I thought
clearly that's out of shot, that's before they when they show the actual shot you can see them.
Yes. Kind of,
but you're gonna say that's not up to OSHA standards.
Someone left Odo's bucket in the hall again.
No, that's Odo. That's not the bucket.
Yeah. Anyway, it's fun to go see it. And whenever they uploaded that, they must have stuck to the 10-minute marks. You know, they used to have a 10-minute limit on YouTube videos. But if you look down on the next ones that's going to suggest, you'll see a part 2 and maybe a 3. So you can follow along and watch more of it.
Well, it's in 2 parts because it says part 1 of 2 !! So.
I'm sorry, I didn't have it up in front of me. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Hey, quit yelling at me.
It's also interesting because at the very beginning, I think we come in a little bit after the very beginning of this piece, you see a very short segment where they're interviewing the person who built the original TOS series Enterprise model.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool.
We've seen that shot of it out on the sidewalk many a time, but they're actually talking to the person that was involved with building it. So that was pretty cool.
And you know, getting back to that note about Sisko and Jake as they were walking down the hall, it's, as anybody who's done any video production will tell you, if it's off camera, it doesn't exist. It just doesn't matter.
Until they show it on camera. Until they show it. Hey, there was another video I saw I happened across because I watched these. Then it starts suggesting other, hey, you might like this one. It was one, I don't have it in, I'll see if I can link it in the show notes. It was, this guy was restoring the Galileo shuttle.
Yes.
It had been out of circulation for a long time, I guess in somebody's private collection. And then it went up to auction and this guy bought it and they were restoring it. And I think ended up in Houston at the NASA Space Center.
Yeah, I remember it, I wasn't clear whether or not that was its final home, but I remember it being there in the documentary they were shooting. And I can't remember if it was just on display for a while or whether that's where it ended up.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, so that was very cool. And so those are model citizens making these things. And not model citizens are always involved with drunk history on Comedy Central. So this story comes to us from TrekMovie.com. It says, watch Drunk History telling the story of Nichelle Nichols and Star Trek. On Tuesday, Comedy Central's Drunk History will turn its inebriated gaze on a bit of Star Trek history, telling the tale of Nichelle Nichols. The segment features comedian Ashley Nicole Black narrating a story about how Nicole was convinced to stay on her role as Uhura by Martin Luther King, TV's first interracial kiss, and Nicole's work with NASA. You can watch the full segment and read our exclusive interview with creator and star Derek Waters. Singer and actress Raven Simone plays Nichelle Nichols. Jaleel White plays MLK. Craig Kukowski, hey, Officer Kukowski from Community, plays Gene Roddenberry. And Waters plays William Shatner. I don't know if you guys had a chance out, but it's pretty funny. Well, it's always interesting because you have the narrator who is drunk telling the story, and you cut to actors acting out those scenes, and they are just mouthing whatever that person was saying when they were drunk relating the story. So it's amusing. And those are the three topics that they cover. And I think a lot of us have heard these stories before, but it's really fun to see everything all pulled together. And the producer said that he didn't get a chance to speak with Nichelle, but he sent her a copy of this, and she was laughing hysterically about it. She says, that seems like a good seal of approval.
That's exactly what happened. That's cool. Actually, when you mentioned Tuesday, it was actually February 6th, so you should be out by now, and you can go watch it.
Right, and we're going to link all the stories for this episode in the show notes.
Wait for episode
14 over at thetopicistrek.com. And so you can click on the links there. It takes you directly to this article, and they have embedded in there the entire segment about Nichelle in there. So you can check that out.
Hey, I want to ask you, the Drunk History, I haven't watched it before. Is it is it good? I mean,
It's good. I mean, some people get more drunk than others. I mean, Ashley in this one, she does a pretty good job of staying on point with what she's doing. But there are some people that are just barely conscious still that are telling the stories. And whatever they're saying, that's the way the story goes as they try to recreate it with the actors, you know, in costume and everything, saying this dialogue. I think they've got to be in like the third or fourth season by now of Drunk History. It's been going for quite a while.
It says five seasons.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So I'll check it out. A lot of drunk history there for you to check out.
I've got a lot of drunk history, but we're not talking about that tonight.
No, clear your browser. That's all I'm saying.
That's my Facebook feed.
Anyway, so, you know, those people were drunk. And when people are drunk, they say weird things. Well, we're going to find out another story here about weird things being said.
That's right. From Gizmodo.com, Worf's dad is repeatedly disgraced when predictive text writes, Star Trek, The Next Generation. Predictive text. Is that like when on your phone, when you have the three choices of words and you pick one and then you just randomly go to the next one?
That's exactly what it is.
Exactly.
Okay, here we go. Star Trek Next Generation was one of those shows that only got better over the years. Well, until now. Predictive keyboards have stepped in to continue the saga of the USS Enterprise with unpredictable results. And, of course, Q is along for the ride because only a god could orchestrate such madness. Predictive keyboards suggest words for super fast typing and can be found on most smartphones and added to computers. Botnik Studios, which previously created the J.K. Rowling-like masterpiece Harry Potter and the Portrait of What Looked Like a Large Pile of Ash, has created an episode of Star Trek Next Generation created with predictive keyboards that were taught syntax based on all seven seasons of the series. Botnick Studios presents Star Trek The Next Generation, episode 279. Here's looking at Q. Opening Ooh. Shot. The heavily damaged Enterprise in orbit around a family restaurant. I'm going to try
to do that in SNL.
I'm going to apologize for the voices here. Captain's log, stardate 48213.7. We have been involved in a damp and terrible battle. However,
sounds a little more like Professor X, but
today is my first birthday in space, so I'm going to have an elaborate cat food dinner with my friend Worf. Dining room of family restaurant. Mr. Worf, I appreciate this present of my clothes for my birthday, but as I am a boy, I need my toys. You've disgraced my father with your words.
Whoa.
Q falls out of the ceiling wearing cargo pants.
Yeah.
The time for me is here. Q, I see you have a concussion. Whoa. I am immortal, Picard. I have hurt my head in a very big number of time. Sounds like it was translated to Japanese and back. Q takes a bite of his hand and then turns into a tractor.
As Q does.
This is from the past. Fade out. Opening credits. Space. What is the point of it? You have no idea. This is the Enterprise, a big circle with a porch.
What?
I'm the Captain Picard. Come with me.
I am the Captain Picard.
Q main theme. Enterprise zips and zaps at the screen for 2 hours.
That's a lot of credit.
Let's roll that B footage over and over and over.
Da, 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 again.
It's really hard to binge watch. You just want to stop. Enough, enough.
Oh, my goodness. And there's more of this nonsense in this. Geordi's in one of them. Troy and Geordi enter the holodeck with chips and suspicion.
Weren't they a comedy team in the 60s? I don't know.
Craig, this sounds like the show titles that the AI made up.
Exactly.
This is hilarious.
Okay. What's that thing about monkeys and an infinite amount of monkeys and infinite amount of time?
Yeah.
We won't catch up to AI.
So this is almost as funny as watching O'Brien stand by in the transporter room.
I should merge these two things together.
I know, right?
Let the predictive text do the life of Chief O'Brien. Well, that was fun. What's next?
It was indeed. Well, you know, so that's things gone horribly wrong. And speaking of things gone horribly wrong.
Wow.
We have this story.
Yes. And speaking of AI. AI puts Nick Cage into Star Trek and writes TNG episode. The video. I'm going to read it first. I'm sorry. The video is hilarious. This week's collection of great links about Star Trek across the web leads with the rise of the machines. First relates to the new trend for a group of Redditors who have started using an app based on deep learning technology in a very important way by adding Nicolas Cage to every movie they can think of.
Oh, no.
Cage has been swapped in for Superman, Indiana Jones. I'm going to go look at these. Indiana Jones, James Bond, and many other films, and now Star Trek Insurrection. Swapping him for Captain Picard. And you watch the video, and it actually put his face in there pretty well. But it's funny because his lips are moving along with Patrick Stewart's voice, except for the last part.
Did you notice the typo? I mean, the video clearly says deep fakes Picard, but the last sentence here is watch the video from derp fakes below.
Yeah, derp fakes.
Well, they use predictive text to do the title.
Right. And then it goes on, this same article goes on to talk about the predictive text. So we were just talking about another article.
Wait, forgive the audio intrusion. I want to see this a little bit.
Rested. I won't let you move.
So what you see
I'm
acting on orders from the
Fed. Mostly Nicolas Cage's face. I think maybe there's a bit of Patrick Stewart's lips in there, his mouthing his actual words.
It did a good job.
They did a pretty darn good job, yeah.
Matter of fact, I went through and I looked at a bunch of the other ones that are on that link from the Redditors, and I think this is one of the best of them. You get to see his face very clearly. They have one where he replaces the, not the T-1000, the in Terminator 2, the one that when you have the scene with the policeman is chasing after them. So they replaced the policeman's face with Nicolas Cage, and it's harder to tell. So some of them are better than others, and I think this one, it's clearly Nicolas Cage doing
these scenes. Gosh. I just clicked on the link so I could save it for later, and the header on the YouTube channel has Amy Adams' face swapped out Nicolas Cage for Superman.
It's not pleasant.
Okay, you've been warned, dear listener.
Hey, look, you were playing the audio on that video.
Yeah.
Get towards the end, about the last, 20 seconds, and wait till he stands up.
I'll come back to it later.
Anyway, he stands up and his voice is totally different because it's Nicolas Cage's voice. It's like, what? Anyway.
So remember that you can get links to all of this stuff by going to the show notes for episode 14 over at thetopicistrek.com.
Do you want me to wait till the .com is done, or do you want me to put the bell in there before?
I like it just the way you did it.
Yeah.
I'm hearing a pause and thinking that's where it goes. Just making sure we're in sync.
Yeah. We're more like Backstreet Boys at this point. But anyway.
Oh. Or just Timberlake.
That's putting words in somebody else's mouth or something, I suppose. And speaking of other voices and words, talk about your Klingon. Man, I really got to work on this stuff. Okay, so brush up on your Klingon for a new vacation hotspot.
Oh, I'm all over this.
This one comes to us from The Eagle, which is a newspaper from somewhere that likes eagles, I guess. The story from Stockholm. In search of a new and different vacation spot with great food and cultural delights, look no further. A theater in Stockholm is playing host to a Klingon delegation seeking to promote tourism to Kronos, the home planet of the ruthless yet honorable race of warriors from the cult TV franchise Star Trek. Cult? Cult, you say?
Yeah.
The event shows... We're a full-fledged religion now.
Exactly. Yes, the event shows off the best of the race's culture, including opera, martial arts, and culinary delights, such as gach, a delicacy of well-seasoned live worms, and blood wine, along with a stage presentation, offered four times a week in English and Klingon. The lobby of the Turn has displays offering vacation packages to Kronos, extolling the merits of Klingon culinary tours, the best-kept secrets of the Beta Quadrant, and seeking to attract students to courses at the military academy. Find your inner warrior in outer space. Star Trek fans were out in force on Saturday for the show's premiere, eager for the first contact with Klingons.
I got that poster over there.
I think it was for this place? I think it was a really good show, says Urban Anderson, chairman of the Stockholm Trekkers Association, dressed in his Starfleet uniform. Many fans were relieved to see that the visitors from Kronos resembled the Klingons from the 1990s Star Trek The Next Generation rather than from Star Trek Discovery.
Because it takes too much to do the makeup.
Well, they are exactly the way I expected them to be, said Snorret Linder, dressed in a Starfleet Trill as a Starfleet Trill, humanoid species from the planet Trill. It was a point stressed by the Klingons themselves, who sent a message for Quentin Tarantino, director of the upcoming Star Trek movie. Well, We'll see.
Maybe not.
We have seen Discovery. We do not approve of this malicious portrayal of Klingon, said Ambassador Banshee of the House of Duras. Treat our race honorably in your upcoming picture, and we will let you lick our feet. Fail and pray for mercy. The show runs until the end of March.
Alrighty then.
I wonder if that blood wine is vintage 2309.
This first picture on the article, the person in the foreground, doesn't look so much Klingon. She looks more like that character that Data befriended on the planet that was blowing up from volcanic activity. Only, you know, that dirty little girl, only she's grown up.
I thought she looked like she belonged. There. I thought she belonged in the band Kiss.
Are you ready for rock and roll?
Well, you've just witnessed it, listener. We've crossed Kiss with Star Trek somehow.
But remember, the topic is Trek.
Yes.
Excellent. Well, these people clearly have an obsession with Klingons. And speaking of obsessions...
Is it my turn again?
I'm afraid so.
I'm afraid not. This may be the final frontier of obsessive Star Trek cataloging. From avclub.com. I love that title. That just makes you think of the AV nerds, doesn't it?
I'm bringing out the cart right now.
I know how to thread the projector.
Hey, I can make fun of it because I did it.
What's that?
I can make fun of it because I did it.
Yeah. Clinton, we don't need the VCR in here again.
All right.
Does anybody need an opaque projector? Well, that never made sense. Why would you need an opaque projector? You wouldn't be able to see through it.
Well, you just get on with the story.
Over the decades, fans of the Star Trek franchise have come to represent the prototypical obsessive sci-fi nerd.
That's right. Star Trek.
This is due in large part to Trekkers. I'm a Trekkie, sorry. Penchant for going beyond just an intimate knowledge of the show's lore and characters, as we found out abusively at Dragon Con last year.
Do what? Oh, yeah.
Yes.
With the trivia show. Don't do Star Trek trivia drug, kids. It won't end well.
But you can tell history. You can tell history.
Yeah, that'll be on drug history. What happened to my friend Chuck at the All right, keeping reading on here. They have more than just an intimate knowledge of the show's lore and characters, and delving into fastidious cataloging of alien species, uniform designs, ship schematics, and Riker beards.
All soaking wet over here. How did that happen?
We'll have to ask John Bell for forgiveness later.
Yeah, right.
But now we may have finally reached the final frontier of Star Trek cataloging with this exhaustive collection of video errors that appeared throughout the show. Organized by blogger and Trek fan Ashley Bluer, Signal Loss is an ongoing project that's attempting to map every scene where an audiovisual signal loss is being conveyed to the audience. This can occur when the crew is attempting to contact a planet or ship that's in trouble, when some sort of virus has infected the ship's interface, or when someone gets stuck halfway through teleporting. Basically, if a character is looking at a glitchy screen, it's going to be on this list. Oh, Tholian Web with Kirk floating around in the middle of nowhere should be on like half a dozen of those.
What?
Only when he's on the screen. He can't just be floating around in the ship. He's going to be on the screen.
A notable example of this effect appears in the TOS episode, The Corbomite Maneuver, when the crew is contacted by the puppet version of Baylock, whose video transmission has an underwater motion effect. In the Next Generation episode, Booby Trap, Data spends the majority of the episode attempting to recover video from an ancient memory coil that contains a very fuzzy message from a long-dead alien species. But signal loss is about more than just staticky screens. Bluer is equally interested in physical forms of tech like data disks and film reels, as long as they result in a loss of clear communication. Quote, eventually, with enough research, I hope to be able to...
Was that an air quotes?
I will say, yeah.
Good, I did it right.
Quotes. That was curly air quotes.
smart quotes are turned off on this show.
Thank you.
I hope to be able to come up with some conclusions and overviews beyond what is already obvious, Bluer writes. We're not sure what kind of conclusions can be drawn from this kind of research beyond the fact that the production design on Star Trek kicks ass, but signal loss is still in the early phases and doesn't yet include any moments from Discovery, and only a handful from 7 seasons of Deep Space Nine. Craig's almost done. Bluer is welcoming contributions from fellow obsessives. So, if you're planning to start up that Voyager rewatching anytime soon, be sure to note any weird screens. I was going to say scenes. Yes. It's like, that's all of them.
Yeah, scenes. Which, this is really weird because when I first was reading this, when they talked about video errors.
Yeah.
So, I thought they meant about, you know, like, a microphone was in the shot or, you know, something. No, they mean about you're watching a screen and the screen is wobbly or the signal fades in and out or
I'm thinking. Yeah, I thought the same thing. I was like, okay, where's the somatic error, you know, that gets screwed up?
Because they show the clip from the Corbomite maneuver where you have Baylock on the screen.
Yeah.
And I realize, oh, they're talking about the fact that it's just a wobbly image on the screen. That's it. That's,
yeah. We're all familiar with it. So
yeah.
Very weird. Very weird indeed. Well, everyone has to have a hobby, and that's this guy's hobby.
Wow.
I'm counting all the threads and all the uniforms on Star Trek.
Well, as unclear as those video images are, there are some clear video images that might be in our future involving Mr. William Shatner. Isn't that right, Craig?
Yes, and he couldn't be more 3D.
Yes.
So William Shatner, who hasn't played the role of Star Trek's Captain Kirk in more than 20 years, aside from an appearance at the Oscars a few years ago, reading his autobiography, he believes that, I'm sorry, that was just a weird sentence to kind of read.
Reading Kirk's, his autobiography.
Believes that virtual reality and CGI is the key to return as the iconic character. In an interview with Daily Mail, Shatner now 86, I recently connected with a virtual reality company, Ziva,
Drunk history.
Craig Stepp, everybody. Send your mail to craigstepp@gmail.com.
Virtual realized me in 240 cameras all around shooting me. They can now produce my body in any form or any way, actually, including what I was like 50 years ago. Okay. Shatner's Captain Kirk is of course killed by Tolian Soron. While trying to save the inhabitants of Viridian 4 and his Enterprise crew in 1994 Star Trek Generations. Last year, Shatner said he was ready to play Kirk once again, but noted that the problem is that there is already a youthful existence of, you know, Chris Pine's Kirk already in the captain's chair. So do you think you're ready for a CGI version of Kirk?
Not the CGI version that these people produce, because I went searching for the company that it refers to, which is Ziva.
Yeah.
And their virtual reality people still are not really there. You know, you've got a very much of a, you know, Uncanny Valley, weird, floppy.
Like,
is it creepier than Jeff Bridges' Tron?
Yeah, that's what I was going to bring up.
Well, what they were demonstrating on their site were real-time virtual reality 3D people, so they weren't as detailed as you would get with that type of thing.
they look sort of like the Money for Nothing characters.
Well,
yeah,
just a little blocky.
Big curved chin.
Yeah, I don't. I so I don't. I I just don't think that we're there yet. That if for some reason they wanted to have Captain Kirk back, I just don't think this would cut it. Maybe if you had it on with a video loss signal on a screen, see, that guy could come back and say, oh, I've got all the catalogs of every kind of video noise you can have. You can pick from all of these. And if they showed him on the screen and you couldn't quite make him out, but he was there and it was Shatner's voice, you know, maybe you can make that work. Possibly. I don't know. I'm not buying it, really.
We mentioned the carbamide maneuver a little while ago. Would you mind if I quickly injected the sequel to that show? You might remember this. This is an old bit from Technorama, but I couldn't resist.
Okay. Go for it.
Oh.
Ensign Bailey's log. Stardate. Oh, what's the use? It's been over 40 years. 40 years since I made that horrible mistake.
But I'm his company. Conversation. Even an alien would be welcome. Perhaps one of your men. For some period of time. An exchange of information. Cultures.
Yes, both our cultures would benefit. Do you know where we can find a volunteer, Mr. Bailey?
Me, sir, I'd like to volunteer.
Ah, you represent Earth's best, then.
No, sir, I'm not. I'll make plenty of mistakes.
Mistakes, all right. 40 years with this little bald kid. 40 years with nothing but Tranya. Tranya! I tell you, if I have to drink one more glass of Tranya, I'm gonna take that ladle and stick it up Baylock's. Kirk said this would be a temporary assignment. He's been known to forget about people. Just look at Khan. At least someone came back to check on him, even if by accident. Nobody's ever gonna know about Star Trek: The Wrath of Bailey.
I think you need some Baileys, actually. At this point,
the wrath of coffee and Baileys.
Well, on that note, we're going to close up our subspace chatter file.
Try to inject a little culture into this show, and this is what I get.
If he'd been drunk, it would have fit in with the theme. But, you know, he didn't have enough Tranya before he started doing his bit. So
I'm willing to bet dollars to donuts that they're going to have Tranya on the Star Trek cruise.
Oh, yeah. Matter of fact, I was reading a review and they do have a alcohol-based Rectigino drink. So that'd be fun.
That's much more of a coffee drink.
Rectigino and Bailey's.
Yeah.
See? It's perfect. It's perfect.
They won't know what hit them.
I know, right?
So now we're going to go on our main mission.
We are. What we button are. Should I push for that one, sir?
Push any button.
Engage.
See Okay.
Where'd you get those things off the bridge?
You push the triples buttons and see, that's what happens.
You'd be amazed where you could stick your fingers on those things.
No. Stop that. No. Say. So we'll get the question I have about the triples in a minute here. But in today's main mission, we're going to take a Z minus 10,000 meter deep dive into one subject, although it's actually two, and try to stay on topic. And this episode, we're talking about episodes 13 and 14 of Star Trek Discovery.
Yep.
So I suppose we should play once again, spoiler alert.
There.
Oh, come on. You know, I worked hard on that.
I hope the listener's having as much fun with this as we are.
Yeah, loads.
You know what I said? So, the listener.
Well, yes.
the listener.
By the way, if you're listening to this episode, then we've clearly fixed our problem with our iTunes feed. So.
Sorry. You have a few extras to listen to this week.
Like yeah. Glitch. Like glitch. So in our first episode that that premiered since we last spoke, in What's Past is Prologue, we have Mira Lorca taking over the Charon. And that works out not so well for Lorca. And Discovery escapes the Mirror Universe. So what did you people think of What's Past is Prologue?
I liked it. I thought it was a great plot twist. I mean, we knew he was from the Mirror Universe at the end of 12. So this is, and what are we going to do with that information? And I think they dealt with it very well. I would have liked to spend a little more time in the Mirror Universe.
I felt like, you know, he had this plan that he spent obviously years and years and years developing, and in less than an hour, falls apart. He's done. You know, so
wait a minute. Years and years. Well, I'm sorry. Are you talking about before he came to the Prime Universe?
Well, he probably was working on, something before he's unceremoniously got zapped into our universe, and then tried to make his way back again to execute that plan and was thinking about it during that time. So you see inklings of it, but he kind of gets to the throne room and then, you know, Burnham, come with me. No, stat, dead.
I'm curious as to how, I understand how he made his plan in the Prime Universe, but that doesn't equate to having a plan to free your tribe and take over the ship in the other universe, because you don't know what state they're going to be in when you get back. I mean,
no, that's why, that's
what happened to us when we got back to the Prime Universe. So, hey, we're 9 months off. We're losing badly.
Well, that's why he needed Burnham, because he knew that she was the key. That's something he could control, at least to get control, to his leverage, rather, to get control of the Charon. Because he knew that Georgia was going to react to her and the whole thing. So I think that was part of the plan, is to at least get on the ship. He knew that his crew was there and knew that Burnham would throw a monkey in the wrench, so to speak, for Giorgio and kind of throw things off.
Well, the Burnham part, I say yes. He didn't really know that his crew was necessarily still on that ship, though. And I can understand him knowing about the fact that Stamets, was developing that weapon, that biological weapon, because he might have been working on that as a 20% hours project, you know, in my off time, developing an evil bioweapon.
That's my 20% project at work.
Exactly. So I can understand that part. I think I just felt like it seemed to go south very fast. I mean, we have that standoff with Giorgio and her troops, and half the people in the room get massacred with those the guns on the walls and so forth. And it seems like he's losing right away. And I think I would have liked to have seen something a bit more complicated in terms of his plan.
Well, he should have listened to, what's her name? I can't remember her name. No.
Oh, his second in command.
Yeah. Because she said, we need to fall back.
Landry.
And there's people that support.
Yeah. Landry.
Yeah. There's people Rekha that Sharma. Support us. And he was like, no, we're right where we need to be. Like, okay. So, yeah, you're right. She actually had more of a plan than he did.
Yeah.
And she's been in a pain booth for a couple of years and a half. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. And she gets up and kind of goes, blah, 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 shakes that off. Right. And is back, good to go.
Come on, just hustle it off. It'll be all right.
Walk it off.
All right. So, one side note. Giorgio can kick.
Oh, yes. Well, yes.
One, she kicked a knife out of the air. Two, she kicked him in the face while she was point blank, you know, right behind it or right in front of him.
Right.
Yeah, I was like, what?
She's very flexible.
Yes.
Have you seen some of these martial arts people?
She's very flexible, as Emperor should be.
Absolutely. although she's single-minded yet flexible. It's a very odd combination.
So she pushed off Lorca into the ball of fire, the mycelial
orb.
Yeah, so do you think he's technically going to be coming back? Because he got pulled into that, and
I mean, part of you says, well, is he now part of the network? Is he just evaporated? You know, which way did that go?
That's what I'm saying. I mean, I could totally see where if they brought him back, they could explain it by him being absorbed by the network.
And then we had that
explosion was like not long after he fell in.
So. We have that mysterious, I forget whether it was green or blue, that one little thing that goes on to Tilly's shoulder when they come back to the Prime universe.
Yeah, I'm going to have to watch for that. I missed that until they mentioned it on After Trek. And they give a hint that it is going to play into the future.
Right, you see it coming down, and they have this overhead shot of it just slowly making its way down and landing on her shoulder and then disappearing. And I'm going, okay, what exactly is that?
It's biblical.
It's going to turn into...
son with whom I am well pleased.
She's going to turn into Poison Ivy from Batman.
Oh, that's what happens. They're back in the Prime universe, and we move on to the next episode.
Well, we have the surprise transport, which was very reminiscent of how Dr. Gillian Taylor jumped on Kirk in Star Trek IV.
Oh, that brings up an interesting point. So suddenly, is this the only time we've seen that type of thing happen? But when they get to the transporter pads, they're on two separate pads.
Yes, I thought that was interesting. And maybe just now, a clumsy editing. I'm not sure what was going on there.
I mean, part of me says that makes sense because the transporter says there are two separate entities here. And I should put them on two separate pads.
But I won't. I mean, yes, I should.
Do you have to be on a pad? Because I thought if they beamed somebody, they had somebody who was dead and laying on the ground, and like Dr. McCoy would be leaning over this person, and they say, beam us up. And the person's still laying on the ground, and the doctor's still leaning over him. It's not like he's standing up on a separate pad.
Yeah.
Ah, but what if, trying really hard here. What if, because doesn't everything in the mirror universe vibrate at a slightly different frequency?
Yes.
So the transporter goes, one of these things is not like the others.
Well, then it should have been doing that to Lorca the whole time.
Well, as far as I know, he was not on a pad with somebody else at any point. You know, it was like cuddling when he was transporting somewhere.
Hey, Admiral.
Unless it's... episode I missed somewhere along the line.
I'll tell you another part of the transporter disparity that we're talking about is, you know, in Star Trek, I guess the 2009, when they're falling off the platform and they can't get a lock on them because they're moving.
Yes.
They even lost Spock's mom because they had a lock on her and she fell and they couldn't track her. So how are they doing that, tracking movement? Not only that, but pulling in two people in this version of the transporter when it takes place, before 10 years before.
On a positive note, I absolutely love Doug Jones's acting.
Oh, absolutely.
He's phenomenal.
He is. And the look he gives at the end of episode 14 when, the Admiral says, this is, look, Captain Giorgio's not dead. And he shoots a look over there and it's great.
Especially when he finds out that they've been eating kelpian.
Yes. So we move on to the next episode. We're back, and suddenly we come to grips with the fact that Emperor Giorgio is on board, and Saru comes to grips with the fact that apparently they've been dining on Kelpians this entire time, just having a good old time. you know, I thought when he said, you know, when Burnham said, well, I you know, Saru says, I asked you if there were any other Kelpians, and I thought she was going to say, well, were, but then dinner.
We ate them all.
No, because the Saru in the Emir universe was a nice guy and loyal and gave her a bath and everything.
He was. And saved her life, even.
Yeah. So,
but now that we're back in the Prime universe, we find out that things have not been going well. Matter of fact, the Federation is pretty near the end of its rope.
So what, I mean, the Discovery gets back and they're pretty far behind enemy lines. What were the others doing out there that they magically forced the beaming lurking aboard?
They were lurking.
So the question is where was the Admiral's
ship, and why was Sarek on board?
Were they that far behind enemy lines, though? Because he said they were a light year away from Starbase 1. He said it was...
Okay, so they were not that far. Maybe it was that... Yeah, the map made it look like the battle lines were completely redrawn in...
Yeah, I was trying to figure out, well, where really what... The Discovery kind of left from that planet, right? Because that's when they went to make their jump.
Right.
To get back to Starbase, what was it, 42 or something? Well, that's the answer anyway. and they disappeared, and I can't tell when they jumped back, since they were off by 9 months. Were they also some completely other place?
Oh, yeah, as in not where they were when they left?
Yeah. So they get back to Starbase 1 and find out there's no Starbase 1 to get back to. And apparently we find out that the Klingons are very slow to react to a Starfleet vessel just right off of their starbase, because, you know, the Discovery kind of hangs there for a while and they discuss about how many life forms.
Yeah, they're hanging out.
So what's happening, yo? We've tried to hail you and everything, so you know we're here. And
hey, you know what, Clinton? I'm a little hungry. Let's go down and discuss this while we over lunch.
Can we just get out of here?
We also discovered the Miracle-Gro planet.
Yes.
Yeah.
That I thought was... All I could think of was, crap, David used proto-matter on this one, too.
Yeah. I got to tell you, you know, I would like to have seen like, drop that stuff off and come back.
Yeah.
Yeah, go check it out later.
Not have the entire thing grow in, like, 3 minutes.
Every plant I've tried to grow, I'd kill it.
It's like faster than a chia pet. You know, it's just right up. Well, which is interesting as well, because we've speculated on what happens to the spore drive that we don't know about the spore drive when we get to TOS. Right. And I thought, okay, well, one of their outs is going to be that they don't have the mycelium network anymore, because it's been corrupted. But no, they're able to repair that. Yeah. Oh, well, they're out of spores. No. Well, no, they transformed an entire planet to basically be fuel for the spore drive.
But that's behind enemy lines, too.
Yeah, that's true. So I suppose somebody could come along and just obliterate the planet, and that would get rid of
that. Yeah, they burned off the atmosphere of that other one and killed thousands of people. I want to know, how do you graffiti a starbase?
Yes, giant spray can.
The same way they changed
the stencil is huge.
I say the same way they changed the registration on the ship. Oh, just send the painters out.
Yeah, apparently the Klingon painters aren't as crafty though. This looked like it was slapped on by a second grader.
Like graffiti, yeah.
Well, you know, that house is not very neat. They just kind of whatever they...
They got a great budget on paint.
It's not the artistic house.
It's not the artistic house. The house of Van Gogh.
Right.
Let me near.
Yeah. Anyway, I think I think Cornwell kind of summed it up, where she said they were going to send all the stuff and destroy all this, all the records and everything. So I think that's what's going to ultimately happen with the Discovery, is they're going to have to scrap it because it's too...
Well, that was regarding the Mirror Universe, but yeah, right. Probably have to do that with the Spore Drive technology,
but
too.
I don't know. I mean, I don't get the feeling that the Spore Drive has been a secret among Starfleet. I could be wrong. I don't.
That's true.
They've been out on all these missions.
Right. It was their secret weapon to jump in and out of Klingon battles, fire, and yeah, that seems a bit open now.
So I thought when you said, you know, Cornwell had the right idea, I thought it was like, yes, phasering those fortune cookies was a good idea. You know, because yeah. It was clearly evil.
It was a changeling. It was a founder.
So what I want to know is, you know, what is the deal with that Tribble? Did she previously phaser the Tribble? Because what happened to the Tribble?
Which Tribble?
The Tribble that was on Lorca's stand-up desk.
Yeah, he had it on the desk for a while.
Yeah. Out the
airlock. That was a mirror. That was a mirror one, and it had teeth.
Shuttlecraft or airlock?
Exactly. Lorca's Tribble. And then we have Tyler, and Tyler has no idea what's going on with himself anymore. He's just
find himself.
He's taken his medication, and he seems to be settled in as Tyler, ashamed of what he's done. I thought the scene with Stamets was wonderful. They needed to resolve that, or at least engage that,
address it, so to speak. Yeah, address it. Yeah.
Address it. Yes, thank you. I don't know. I don't think I'll ever trust him again. So this, you know, kumbaya in the lunchroom was a little too much for me.
Yeah, I didn't mind that Tilly went over there because Tilly's going to do what Tilly's going to do.
Yep.
But when everybody came over so quickly, I felt like, all right, gradually over time, sure, but.
Their friendship grows like mycelial spores on that planet.
But is everybody aware that he actually killed Culber?
Probably not.
I have a feeling that they know something was up with him, obviously, because they're being nice to him at the end. But I don't think they realize what all he's done.
They were just told he has the Klingon flu. He's better now.
Yeah. He's got Klingon herpes. Be nice to him.
He's going to appear in a Stockholm production of opera later on.
Right.
And then we have the scratch your head, didn't see that coming. What were they thinking? Huh? Move of making Emperor Giorgio the captain of the Discovery.
Yeah, I kind of got the idea that when she was talking to Sarek about, you know, what do you want, and I can make you win this battle. But how did Cornwell get wrapped into that?
I don't know, because they have the conversation. She and Sarek have the conversation
right.
That they've talked about the plan with Starfleet Command, and they're good with it.
I think what else we got to lose?
Yeah, Sarek said that, you know, nothing conventional is working at this point. We're practically defeated. So
my logic's illogical. And he blew up.
Yeah, I could follow that argument that, you know, everything we've tried isn't working, so logic dictates we have to. We're in survival mode at this point, not defense mode.
But we have to look forward to, apparently, the Discovery is going to jump inside of Kronos.
Right.
I'm hoping that they say, oh, we needed to allow room for the fact we spin around in circles.
Just about the time.
You know, right.
Whoops, yeah. We only have the horizontal surface. We forgot about the height when we spin.
We're going to scrape the side of this starship.
We're going to just route ourselves a new cave. And it happens about the same time as the Klingons are getting to Earth. So who shot first?
Actually, yeah. you know what I thought was funny is if you look at Giorgio becoming captain, kind of stepping back just a moment for that.
Mm-hmm.
It's all coming back to where everything is about the same in place as it was when we started.
That's true. That's,
yeah. I mean, you got, you know, just organized. Well, obviously, Burnham's not first officer, but everybody's on the bridge. Everything's back. Giorgio's there. Lorca's not.
Although, when we were watching the episode, my wife Bonnie said, so do they always have a mirror captain on the Discovery? Apparently so.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right. That never changed, did it?
So that's the one qualification when you're filling out the application to be in charge, you know, to be the captain of the USS Discovery. Are you now? Have you ever been in the Terran Empire? Yes. Okay, come on. Yeah,
check this box. I tell you what, Clint, why don't you go get Bonnie and have her just be on the show?
I'm Captain Gilly. Sign me up.
Captain Gilly.
So we've got a lot of ground to cover in one episode at this point.
I'm predicting a mega epic cliffhanger.
I wonder if, I wonder if this episode is longer, you know, like an end. Or is it another 36 minutes?
Well, hopefully not that. I mean, I don't really, I understand that it's broadcast in some places, so it's only a certain length, but it drives me nuts at the same time because your series is, for all intents and purposes, web only. These episodes could be 63 minutes long.
Right.
70 minutes long.
And a lot of shows on Netflix will do that.
So I think because it's broadcast in a couple, well, in Canada, it's on broadcast. I think that's why it's fitting within an hour format.
Maybe because in some countries it's only broadcast in 50 hertz.
Wait a minute. Yeah. The other was a couple episodes back. It was 37 minutes and some change. I was like, actually, I went to cast it over to the TV using the Chromecast, and I briefly caught the time on the time counter and went, what? 37 minutes?
Yeah, I was.
What am I paying for?
I was watching a video from the people that do Trek Yards, and one of them is in Canada, and they were watching the episode, and they came to the end of that episode, and it went to commercial before the credits. It went to commercial. When it came back, or what he thought was coming back from commercial, you saw a Constitution-class TOS Enterprise on screen.
What?
And he thought, wow, it was a commercial for Star Trek.
It was a commercial for Star Trek?
Yeah, that they run, you know, TOS Star Trek on the channel. So it's like, ah, really?
Oh. Eh.
Yes, I agree with you. I think that we are setting ourselves up for a massive cliffhanger.
Yep.
Coming up next week, because there's just too many things to try to resolve. We could be wrong, but it just seems to me that we've got captains that shouldn't be there. We've got people that are dead. We've got wars going on. We've got, you know, I just can't see that all happening in 48 minutes.
Nope.
Although I didn't expect Lorca to take over the ship and be dead in less than 48 minutes. So who knows? Maybe. Alrighty, on that, it's time to come back from our main mission. And we're going to move on to our warp speed roundtable.
Buckle up, guys.
Okay, so here's where we take one rapid-fire question, and everyone gets a chance to have a say. And this time around, it's something I like to call Once More with Feeling. So, gentlemen, if you could get one more episode of any version of Star Trek, it's like a secret last episode that was filmed, but it was never shown.
Not a movie?
At the time. No, not a movie. Okay. Well, now, let's restrict it to the series. Episodes, okay?
Had to try.
Which series would you pick and why. And I'll start off, so that gives you guys a minute or two to think. And I usually don't start off. That's another reason
why.
We're
going to copy your answer.
That's right. Don't cheat.
Exactly what I was thinking of,
Glenn. Eyes on your own paper.
So mine is that secret episode of Enterprise that comes after the last episode of Enterprise, where we find out that there was a little glitch in that whole hologram, you know, holodeck simulation thing going on, and Trip really didn't die, and you know, all this stuff that was happening, that was just kind of a simulation that was set up for Riker that he had programmed into the thing. And really, here's what happened in that last episode. So
he left the holodeck running, and it
we just wiped that nasty, nasty thing away from Enterprise. Mm-hmm. So that would be my secret episode that got filmed but never shown. And what about you, Craig?
Well, since I'm in the middle of watching DS9, I think DS9 is probably obviously forefront in my mind. So I would say that episode of DS9 where Jadzia and Ezra Dax get to know each other a little bit more in the holosuites. Mm.
And by know each other, you're referring to...
What do you think, Chuck?
Well, I'd like to, we should move on, but I was thinking really quickly that if we, again, filmed just, you know, Blue Sky, that we actually have that transition episode between the two people playing Dax, that we have that the accident and the shuttle and, you know, all that type of stuff going on and, you know, how that all comes to pass rather than, oh, let me give you the backstory just by talking about it.
Right.
Okay. And how about you, Chuck?
Wrath of Bailey.
By the way, way to smooth it over, Clinton.
One final episode of TOS, The Wrath of Bailey.
I know, I was going to say.
I think we got that already.
Okay, yeah, I already wrote that one. It's pretty easy. No, I was, what was I thinking of? Voyager. So they made it back to the Alpha Quadrant, right? And they get told, we got another mission for you to capture somebody in the Badlands. How about it? And they get whoosh back to 70,000 light years away.
A big time loop.
Not necessarily a time loop, just another final mission. We just needed to go clean up one more thing.
Sure. You know, little bits of the Borg Queen are just floating around out there. You want to pick those up? Because it's kind of messy.
And, you know, the whole crew would look at each other and go, I'm out.
I envision a very 70s kind of freeze frame on that last shot, you know, where they're all like throwing their heads back and laughing. Are you kidding? Ha! And they throw their heads back. Freeze frame, credits, out. Hey, all right.
Hey, wait a minute. Before we go, I do want to say one of the coolest episodes I think that DS9 had was the Far Beyond the Stars, where Sisko was Benny the writer.
Yes.
And all the actors were there without makeup, you know, and they all had parts to produce in that magazine. And so, and I would have liked to see another episode like that, maybe either a continuation of that kind of story, although the writing thing did continue on as a little bit of a thread in a couple of other episodes. But I would like to see a little bit more of that.
Okay, that's cool. Yeah, it was fun to see them, you know, stepping outside the traditional characters. And it takes you a while to recognize some people. Going,
Hey, I know what Armin looks like, but without outside of Quark, it looks weird hearing his voice and seeing that face because I've seen him as Quark so much.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Excellent. Excellent choices. All right. We're now going to be closing up. It's about time to boldly go that away until next episode. But first, where can people find you guys? And what are you up to? I'll start with Chuck. What's up?
Yeah, a lot of stuff going on in between work and personal and whatnot. You can find me at chucktomasi.com, which includes links to the podcast and all the other YouTube and Instagram and places. Podcasts are mainly over at chuckchat.com, where I do Technorama with Craig Stepp. And also Podcasting for Dummies, the companion podcast, is at podcastingfordummies.com with T. Morris. There we go. Can't forget the bell. Sorry, I'll try to get it a little better on you guys.
Was the bell for Podcasting for Dummies or for T? I couldn't quite tell there.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Craig, how about you, sir?
You can find me over there, as Chuck mentioned, on Technorama or chuckchat.com. Yeah. And you can find me here on this podcast, but wait, you already found me.
Yes.
What's the URL, Craig?
For which one?
This podcast.
Oh, I think it's thetopicistrek.com.
Now remember, you have to say
thetopicistrek.com.
There you go. Excellent. And you can find me, Clinton, at comedyforecast.com, all one word with the number 4. Didn't realize I was going to get a bell. Look at that. You can also find me on Twitter at Comedy Forecast, on Instagram at Comedy Forecast, on Facebook at Comedy Forecast. Pretty much Comedy Forecast is where you can find me.
Sensing a theme here.
Exactly. And remember, I'm doing reviews of all of the episodes of Star Trek Discovery. You can find those over at thetopicistrek.com. I've got one more to go for this season. Then I get a break.
Yeah, a long break.
A long break for who knows how long. All right. So it's time to engage the Spore Drive. If you like the show, please be sure to tell a friend about it and subscribe so you never miss an episode. We'd love to hear from you. Yes, you. Follow us on Twitter at The Topic Is Trek. Visit our Facebook page or visit thetopicistrek.com. Until next time, on behalf of Chuck, Craig, and myself, I'm Clinton, thanking you for listening. And as we always say here on The Topic Is Trek, don't put on the red shirt.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry.
Roxanne.
So cool. I'm going to get drunk and do some history. Yeah.